live in effect here for episode 8 of the Phoenix Suns podcast. And hopefully at this point, me and Jim are as good at two-stepping as Goran Dragic is in the paint against the Memphis Grizzlies. How you doing tonight, Jim?
I'm doing good. You know, with these podcasts we've been doing, I don't know if we're quite as good as that Goran two-step yet, but I kind of actually feel like we've plateaued a little bit. We're providing this, you know, consistently excellent content, but we've kind of reached the apex here. So to use an analogy, I think we've kind of reached our speed limit. And to use like a completely arbitrary number, let's say that that limit is 45 miles an hour. What I want to try to shoot for today is to maybe go something like 70, you know, blow that speed limit away, kind of leave it in the dust.
So basically what we need to do is we need to just hit the NAS button, go Fast and Furious 6, and, you know, just take this puppy into the next gear then.
Absolutely.
All right, so in this realm of metaphors and analogies that you're using here, I'm going to go ahead and just say that I'm going to be Dwayne Wade. I'm going to be Dwayne Johnson, and you can go ahead and be Vin Diesel, and let's go ahead and Fast and Furious 6 this one. Let's hit this quick recap on the week that was the Phoenix Suns in basketball. And I mean, basically, they went 2-2. They were 500 club. Impressive win against the Lakers. Back-to-back losses there against Dallas and Golden State. Both pretty paltry losses when you look at them. And, I mean, that Dallas game, they pretty much didn't even show up for. That was the first Dallas loss. The one here, they just kind of gave that one up in the fourth quarter. And then turned around and beat the Memphis Grizzlies in Memphis to get their road trip back to 500. They got 5 wins on the road now after we were talking about their futility not that long ago. 2-2 this week, back to a road win here against Memphis. What did you see this week out of Phoenix Suns basketball?
A very mercurial team. The fourth quarters of those 4 games that we just went over, they won the fourth quarter against L.A. 29-13, so that's plus 16. They lost the fourth quarter to Dallas 35-24, so that's minus 11. They lost the fourth quarter to Golden State 32-19, so that's minus 13. And then they beat Memphis in the fourth quarter tonight 31-19. So it's kind of hard to get a real good idea of exactly where this team stands when they stand in different spaces on different ends of the spectrum from game to game. There really isn't any kind of consistent effort. They go through spurts and streaks both ways. So one game they're playing this lockdown defense in the fourth quarter, and Michael Beasley's lighting up the Lakers, and that looks good. And then, you know, you go a couple of games later, and not just in the fourth quarter, but they basically just get run off the court and embarrassed in the second half by the Golden State Warriors. So it's the Jekyll and Hyde Suns.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, in regards to those fourth quarters, we're looking at just those 4, but we got a sample size with Lindsey Hunter now. I mean, he's been coaching this team now for 8 games, 4-4 overall. And when you look at it, they've won 4 games. 2 of those games that they, or rather every single game that they won, they held their opponent 96 points or less. 96 was the apex with the Kings, where they won that game 106-96. Sacramento got some garbage buckets, but I mean, basically 4 wins rather for the Suns, where it was just very defensive oriented, good team basketball, or a good ugly basketball well played by the Suns, better than their opponent. If you're following along with me, bad basketball, and the Suns are winning those games. And then in the games that they're losing, they're giving up points, actually. In every single loss that they have under Lindsey Hunter, they've actually given up over 108 points a game. So, I mean, just completely 2 different ends of the spectrum. Brand new coach, obviously. And when you look at it from this week's perspective, big win against the Lakers at home. I think everyone is pretty impressed with that win. P.J. Tucker did a phenomenal job on Kobe Bryant in that game. Kobe got 4 points off late and got an ugly fadeaway. One of those just Kobe fadeaways. So 6 points out of his 17 came on Kobe just saying, I'm going to do this. And then 11 points for the entirety of the game outside of those 3 buckets. So PJ did a great job on him on that game. And then this one against Memphis, they didn't give the ball to Zebo down the stretch. They didn't give the ball to Jared Bayless down the stretch. It kind of just was typical Memphis Grizzlies bad basketball in the fourth quarter, not being able to find offense. And I said this in the fourth quarter. It was just both these teams look like teams that were fighting for the number 13 pick, and I know that's a little extreme for both teams. Memphis cannot fall to number 13. The Suns more than likely cannot rise all the way up to number 13. I mean, that would take near perfection and near futility for each team respectively. So neither team is going to be the number 13th pick. But when you watch this game, if you get a chance to go back and watch it, if you haven't already, guys, this was a game where it looked like two teams that were about as mediocre as it gets. Suns were looking like they wanted to rise to number 13, and Memphis looked like they were just ready to give it up and just get that 13th pick so they can avoid giving it to Minnesota from that trade over the summer. So just bad basketball, but the Suns are winning these games that are involved with bad basketball. And guys, let's not credit Lindsey Hunter on the Suns winning in bad basketball games. Not to bring up the old coach, but with Alvin Gentry coaching, most of the Suns' wins were in those ugly, bad basketball games, if you kind of remember. Don't have that revisionist history where it's Lindsey Hunter's winning with defense and Gentry was losing with defense. Gentry was actually winning these same exact kind of games, but it was the same thing with Hunter. It was just inconsistent. They weren't able to string together wins. And right now, Hunter's 4-4, 2-2 this week. So, I mean, maybe they can sustain 500 for the rest of the season, which is probably the antithesis of what they need to do in terms of rebuilding and getting that young talent. So I think this week was just a microcosm of what the Suns have been doing the past 2 to 3 years, which is shooting themselves in the foot in terms of starting the rebuild. As soon as you see the wheels turning and you're like, hey, they're going to start rebuilding, then they just start winning basketball games. You're like, okay, guys, I get it. You don't want to lose games on purpose, but you also don't want to just purposely avoid rebuilding.
Yeah. So with the 8 games under Hunter so far, and before coming into the game tonight against Memphis, and obviously we're recording this, burning the midnight oil here, so this is after the Memphis game Tuesday night, I was, you know, ruminating over things I'd be going over in the show tonight earlier in the day, and one of the thoughts that had crossed my mind was that, you know, we were going to be done with the whole new coach smell, which would be replaced by the stink of the Suns, and, you know, they contradicted that with the win against Memphis. But the Memphis win really isn't that startling if you think about it, because the Suns beat Memphis earlier this year, 82-80. They took Memphis to overtime at Memphis before and lost that game. So Memphis seems to be a team that the Suns actually kind of match up well with for whatever reason. They played them close in all 4 games this season. And the Clippers game, you go back to that one, well, the Clippers have lost 7 of 9 with Chris Paul out. So that's not a good team with Chris Paul out. They play, they're a completely different team without him on the court. So is that a good win? You look at it, oh, that's a team with a really good record, but everybody's beating them. So, you know, is it that big of a deal that the Suns beat them also? The Kings are the Kings. The best win, I think, out of the 4 was against the Lakers with, you know, the homecoming of Nash, all the media frenzy surrounding that, the energy there, and, you know, also just from the standpoint that by beating the Lakers, you are also handing them another loss, so you're helping yourself in trying to keep them in the lottery. And like I had mentioned in the last show, what my, you know, best case scenario would have been for the Suns this year was 3 wins against the Lakers and losses in every other game.
Yeah, and that's actually something that they kind of came to fruition a little bit with that Lakers win, but then, you know, turning around and beating Memphis. And, you know, as a lot of people have said, I'm not coming up with some crazy, amazing logic here, but, you know, a lot of people thought Memphis was a fraudulent team this year when they got off to pretty, I mean, it was a pretty amazing start. It was like 17-4, 19-4 or something, and they were the best team in the league by a few games at that point. Then they gave all that back, and now they're kind of sliding down to the middle of the pack in the West, where probably they should have been, minus Rudy Gay. They might fall down a little bit lower. But, I mean, yeah, you beat a Memphis team that you match up well against. You can go out there and play ugly against Memphis because that's what they want, right? I mean, they want to play games in the paint, play games in the 90s. They want to play games with a lot of turnovers. They want those ugly type of games. And when they don't have a closer, they don't have a fourth quarter guy that can get buckets for them, despite Jared Bayless going off against his home city team. You know, it's one of those situations where the Suns are, they're winning games that, oddly enough, that they probably should win. They got the coach killer win against Sacramento. They got the Clippers without Chris Paul. They got the Lakers in a game where they probably should have lost with all that hoopla and Nash returning, and all the Lakers were actually healthy in that game. So as you said, that one is a very respectable win right there. And then against Memphis, you know, no Rudy Gay because they traded him. They're kind of tweaking things around and trying to figure it out still. So, I mean, the 4 wins that they got, 3 of them they probably should have won. And even some of those losses, they probably should have won. And now they as we're going to get into with the preview of the week ahead coming up, they got a lot of games leading up on the schedule here, starting off with New Orleans tonight. So it's going to get tougher for them. It was the one thing that I took out of this game, and this will be a nice little transition into the topic we wanted to cover here, is that Kendall Marshall played pretty well, and he actually closed out this game tonight. He went out there, hit a couple of shots early, had some buckets early, and actually was on the court for the final 5 to 7 minutes of the game with Goran Dragic, something that I thought they should have been doing with Bassey and Goran all season, but they kind of got away from that. But, I mean, with the way things are going with Lindsey Hunter, Sebastian Telfair seems to be an odd man out. Beasley clearly is a guy who's getting more minutes. You know, Marshall is now the backup point guard. What are you taking away from these new rotations? They're not that different than what Gentry is doing outside of a one-name playing versus one-name not playing kind of setup. What are you taking away from these new rotations and what they're doing out there?
Well, just like some of the Suns' play has been fickle, the lineup has been lent to caprice also. Like you had said, the major changes now is that Beasley has been getting pretty consistent minutes. So that's something consistent, even though his play is completely inconsistent. One thing he has been consistent at is he's got 3 turnovers in 4 straight games. So go Michael, you're developing consistency there. Kendall Marshall, he, I guess 3 games ago, took over the backup point guard duties, and Telfair got banished to Luke Zeller and Wesley Johnson land.
Hey, Deontay Garrett's there. They're the four horsemen, not the three musketeers.
The four horsemen of the apocalypse there. Well, you know, and so Marshall's now got that backup point guard role, like you were saying. So it seems like Hunter has went with this new rotation, and actually with Jermaine O'Neal back, now he's basically kind of playing the same 10-man rotation that Gentry was playing, with the only difference really being the Marshall Telfair swap and a little bit more consistent minutes for Beasley. What I'm interested in seeing moving forward is what this team is going to try to do and whether they're really devoted to winning or whether they kind of accept the reality of the situation they're in and decide that, well, you know, losing is in our best interest right now. And so I'm going to be keeping an eye on, you know, even in these next 4 games and then after the All-Star break, whether, you know, Morris starts getting some more consistent minutes. You know, if Marshall's taken over the backup point guard duties and he led the team in minutes tonight, he played 33 minutes, then I don't see why, if you're taking that approach, that it makes sense to, you know, not give the lion's share of minutes at power forward to Markieff instead of Luis Scola, who obviously has no future with the team whatsoever. And whether they're going to do stuff like that, and then, you know, coming up, whether there are going to be some trades. There are a couple people on the roster that, you know, could serve the purpose of helping a little bit younger get some draft picks, and then at the same time, maybe you know, push the team a little closer to losing some of these games, to where you're not, you know, telling people to lose, you're not trying to tank, you're not benching people that would be better served to win games if they were on the court, but you're kind of lowering the level of talent at this current juncture with the purpose of a long-term gain in the future.
Yeah, and another casualty to this, and I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I'm sure different people have different opinions, but the other casualty to the coaching change and the minutes and whatnot is that you see going from 27.2 minutes per game, giving you 12 points a game off the bench and as a starter, as you mentioned, there was no consistency here. So I think only Marcin Gortat and Goran Dragic can call themselves starters for the whole season. But guess this Suns player, 27.2 minutes per game, 12.3 points per game, dropped down to 19.9 minutes per game, and obviously his scoring dropped off as well. Name that Sun, Jim.
Name that Sun. You know, I'm probably not going to do very good at this name, that Sun game.
That Sun is going to be Shannon Brown, who went from, like I said, giving you a little bit over 10 points a game, one of the 10 to 12 better six men in the league. At one point, he was probably vying for being maybe the third or fourth guy when he was putting up big buckets early in the season. But he's a big casualty of this because you look at it from the stat perspective, 27 minutes to 19 minutes. You know, he's losing 7 minutes a night, so maybe you kind of condense what he does into a smaller role and you still get the same production. But at the end of the day, he's not producing as much as he was. He's not getting as many minutes. Him and Bassey are kind of relegated to the bench when a lot of people can probably argue early in the season with a lot of their wins and a lot of their comebacks were predicated on those two guys' energy and Shannon Brown's shot making. So, you know, those two guys relegated to the bench a little bit more. PJ Tucker's kind of risen. He's probably the cream that has risen to the top on this team, which is kind of odd because he's the guy that was in Europe and in the D League and cast out of the NBA after only a handful of games, you know, in one season with Toronto after being a college star. So he's kind of risen to the top, and no one's going to argue with him getting minutes. And you got to give Beasley minutes. You got to give Kendall minutes. So, you know, a lot of these guys are trapped in the roles that they're going to be given for the final, you know, 35 to 40 games now. And it looks like Shannon Brown's one of them. We already mentioned Bassey, and the other three guys weren't playing in general. But there's a lot of talk of getting the young guys on the floor. I challenge everyone out there listening, as well as, you know, Jim to an extent too, who are the young guys on the Suns, and how many more minutes can you play them versus what they're already getting? I mean, this is not a young team.
Right, and, you know, that's where I was steering the conversation in terms of what they can do this season to get younger, because normally a team that's given up on the season, and the Suns, this is a lost season, unless, you know, they think that they can win 20 straight games here and get back into playoff contention, then all we're talking about is a team that is somewhere in the range from about the 3rd to 11th pick. And so, you know, this is a team that's going to decide whether they want to try to finish 11th and maybe the Lakers make the playoffs, and so they have one pick at 11 in the draft, or whether they want to embrace where they are as a team in a franchise right now and try to get that 3rd pick. Maybe the Lakers don't, now you're drafting 3rd and 13th. And now you actually have some young talent that you can add to the guys already on the roster. But, you know, I don't even know if the Suns have completely decided what they want to be, whether they're still vacillating over that and leaving us in basketball purgatory. I don't think they're going to, you know, do the triple crown of 13 picks this year. But, you know, the way it's going, I mean, it would not surprise me if come draft lottery day, come NBA draft day, that all of us are lamenting what could have been instead of what is.
Yeah, and when you look at things in that perspective, it's they don't have a lot of young guys, and there's a lot of conflicting agendas more than likely going on. I mean, you got guys like Lon Babbie and Lance Blanks who are, in a sense, they're competing for their jobs. This is a performance-driven environment, as they've said before. You got to produce, and you know, they haven't produced so far in the first couple of seasons in terms of wins, losses, and playoff appearances. You got Lindsey Hunter, who's trying to prove that he is a head coach in this league, whether it's here or somewhere else, but he's basically trying, this is his audition, so he's not trying to lose games. Babbie and Blanks are definitely not trying to lose games. And then you have Phoenix Suns players who none of them want to lose a game. I mean, all these guys want to go out there and be 82-0, but none of those things are wrong, by the way. I'm not saying, again, as me and Jim have probably laid out there about as plain English as we can, no one should want to go out there and lose a game, but there's ways to rebuild without drafting 13. I mean, you just look back in NBA history and you show me the team that lost their stars and kind of lost their way and rebuilt back to being a model franchise with numerous picks between 10 and 15, because that's where the Suns have been all the way dating back to Earl Clark and Robin Lopez drafts, who are now on different teams playing pretty good basketball. So, I mean, one of the things that the Suns got to do is they got to all get on the same page in terms of agenda. Like, if you guys all want to win, then go all in and try and win and maybe make some moves. Try and, you know, roll the dice and make a move if you can with another team, make a trade, and try and make this team better. I mean, as much as people hated the concept of Rudy Gay, at least that's an effort trade to try and get better. You know, James Harden, that was, you know, an effort play to try and get better. Whether it's jumping into a three-teamer with someone and collecting some assets. You know, if you're going to try and win, go all in and try and, you know, put some chips on the table, try and win some games, get some excitement going. But, you know, if all you're doing is winning just for the sake of winning to save jobs, well, you might be just kind of just walking in circles there. You're turning the corner four times and you end up going in a circle. You're not turning the corner and going straight down the road to being a better team. So they kind of get, I think in the end, they got to get on the same page in terms of agenda. Cause I think a lot of guys are not on the same page when it comes to that.
Yeah. I agree. It's just at a point it's counterproductive. The short-term gain versus the long-term gain, you know, if you're siphoning off of your retirement account to go on vacations now, and you're that short-sighted that you're actually going to mortgage your future long-term for instant gratification, it doesn't make sense for the Suns where the season has gone to try to squeak out as many victories as they can. You know, the Bobcats and the Magic are the examples of the teams that have embraced the suck and are, you know, doing a paragon job of tanking at this point. The Magic are on a 10-game losing streak right now, and they're actually 2-21 since they started 12-13. And then likewise with the Bobcats, they were 7-6, and now they've gone 4-30 since. So those teams obviously threw in the towel. I mean, those teams aren't trying anymore. And then the Suns are in that group right above there, which I'm going to lump Minnesota in now because they've been faltering lately. And so all those teams in that group besides Minnesota are all within 2.5 games of each other. And so really, I mean, looking at it that way, a win here, a win there, the way these teams are stacking up, I mean, that can be really big once we get, you know, towards the end of the season. So, you know, I like the idea of playing young players, and so I hope the Suns get some.
Yeah, and let me just put an exclamation point on what you just said with those teams. You have the Charlotte Bobcats with 6 players under 25 years of age. You have the Orlando Magic with one more than that. They have 7 players under the age of 25. And then you look at the Phoenix Suns, and they have 4. 2 of them are 24, one's 23, one's 21. They don't have any teens. They don't have any 20-year-olds. They don't have any young legs. Kendall Marshall is a 21-year-old rookie. Markieff Morris is a 23-year-old sophomore. You got guys like Deonte Garrett, Michael Beasley, Luke Zeller, Wesley Johnson. All those guys are 24 and 25 respectively, but have been out of college and in the NBA. There's a huge difference when you look at a guy like Kobe Bryant and you go, you know, or any high school guy, and you go, man, they're only 28 years old. You know, they should be going into their prime. Well, no, they've been playing since they were 17 or 18. They're 10-year veterans. They're not 8 or 9 year guys entering their prime. That's you got to look at things from that perspective. And these guys have been in the league for a few years, so they're getting into their prime, or they're exiting out of it, or maybe their prime just isn't something that's going to give you 25, 6-6, or something like that. So. Exactly. They need to get young players, whether that be through the draft, whether that be through a trade. That's the tough thing, is that you're handcuffed into Luis Scola until July because the amnesty pickup. You have Jermaine O'Neal on your roster, which I love. I think he's one of their better players this season. You have Marcin Gortat, who's going to demand money after next season. And then you have guys like in the middle of the pack there with Shannon Brown, Jared Dudley, Sebastian Telfair, P.J. Tucker, Goran Dragic. They're all between 26 and 28 years old. So this is a middle-aged team. I've said that numerous times. I'm beating that drum to death, but they're a middle-aged team in terms of the NBA, and I think that, like Orlando, they have all the role players ready for a superstar to carry them to a fourth, a fifth seed, and then maybe beyond that once they get some experience together. They have all the role players in place. I think guys like Goran and guys like Marcin Gortat and guys like Jared Dudley, P.J. Tucker, they would flourish if they had a guy on the perimeter or in the paint that was able to dominate the ball and consistently get them 20 to 25 points a night. They would flourish, and this team would be remarkably different if you stuck like a Zach Randolph, or if you stuck like a James Harden, or you stuck some of those guys that are available and good enough to lead a team and be the number one guy. This team would be remarkably different if they had one of those guys, but they don't, so they got to get younger and find them through the draft, which is where it happens. I mean, Tom Ziller of SB Nation that writes over there for the Sacramento Kings, he did a good piece today, or we're listening to this tomorrow, so he did a good piece on Tuesday talking about the importance of the NBA draft and collecting assets, and that's where it's at, and that's not just coming from me because I'm a draft guy. That's just where the assets are. It's not everyone gets to be Miami or Boston or LA where free agents gravitate towards you and you can create the perfect storm of getting all-stars on your roster that way. this is the NBA where you build through the draft and you got to build from the ground up like San Antonio and Oklahoma City and basically every other team in the NBA today.
Yeah, and I agree with that, especially where the Suns are. Like you had said, they're a middle-aged team, and especially the way it is with the starters, because you've got Luis Scola, who's the immovable object, and he's on the descending trajectory of his career. But the other starters are between 26 and 28. And if you were 32 and 17 with four guys starting in their prime, then you'd be ecstatic. But when you're 17 and 32 with four guys in their prime starting, that's not good. You know, by adding a superstar in here, the team suddenly becomes, you know, competitive, capable of getting a home court advantage spot, a four seed possibly. Well, that would be adding the superstar without subtracting anything else. And as we saw earlier this year when the Rockets were able to acquire Harden, in order to, you know, make something like that work in a trade scenario, we basically have to say, okay, take anything you want on the roster. And so by the time they took everything, including draft picks, then we'd have Harden and Kendall Marshall and Michael Beasley and nine guys from the D League. So it's not, you know, quite that simple to add on, but you know, you got to have somewhere to start. You know, can you trade all those assets to acquire a superstar? Well, you know, that's possible. We've seen Houston do it. But I like the idea of trying to draft third because I think you have a lot better chance of finding a guy like Westbrook or Harden or any number of other great players in the league now that were drafted in that 3 to 5 range than I do the idea of thinking we can go get that superstar player with the 11th pick.
Yeah, yeah, and you look across the league, I mean, just anywhere between 1 and 10, as we talked about, the Suns have been somewhere between 10 and 15, and I shouldn't even say that, I should say between 13 and 15, because they had 13 twice, 14 once, 15 once, in terms of the last four drafts. But when you look at it, anywhere between 1 and 10, you can find a star if you scout well enough. I mean, you get guys like Damian Lillard who go 6. You know, you get guys like James Harden who go 3. You get guys like Paul George who goes 10th. You know, if you do proper scouting and you have a top 10 pick and you just find the right guy, then you can have a superstar in your team. I mean, look at a team like Indiana. They don't necessarily need Paul George because they have Danny Granger and they built around him and they got a pretty solid team. You know, Danny Granger goes down and now Paul George gets to go, hey, guess what? A la James Harden, I'm a star. And now all of a sudden, guys like Danny Granger are expendable. So getting those top 10 picks are adding assets. You mentioned the Charlotte Bobcats earlier. They're not a good basketball team, but they got like 50 top 10 picks on that roster. And they got a lot of guys to where if a team maybe in a year or two goes, hey, you know what, we got an extra, like Oklahoma City in a couple of years when Jeremy Lamb or their next top 10 pick that they're about to get from Toronto decides to become a superstar, or maybe they got to get rid of somebody, you know, some teams got to get rid of a star because they have too many of them and they can't pay them. Well, look at Charlotte. They're a team that can go, hey, go ahead and take, we got 5 top 10 picks from the past 5 years. Go ahead and take your pick of 3 of them. You can go ahead and have whoever you want. And that's kind of like what Houston did, is they just kept collecting assets and collecting picks. And the Suns kind of did that. I just think that they kind of hedged their bets in the wrong direction on a few guys, and a few guys that they thought would be assets aren't exactly as sexy as they are in a trade market as maybe what they projected early on. They got like Marcin Gortat, they probably thought would be a really nice asset, like a really, really nice one. And guys like Markieff Morris and Beasley would be really solid assets. But, you know, in the long run, those guys have not had amazing seasons. That's part of the reason why the Suns aren't a really good team or even a good team this season so far. So that, you know, their best assets are Jared Dudley, who's going to get you Rudy Gay, or Marcin Gortat, who's going to get you maybe a late first rounder and maybe a young guy who the team has given up on. So that's where things get interesting, is that they got assets, but they don't have like Houston Rocket assets that get you James Harden. They don't have the kind of assets that are going to net you a superstar or emerging superstar in this league.
Yeah. And well, you had mentioned that with Toronto and Rudy Gay, with the way that draft pick works out, I would be going after a guy like Gay, too, to try to squeak out some extra victories. That's going to be pretty embarrassing there if they can't finish with a little bit of a better record and distance themselves from the bottom of the barrel there.
What's yep. Pretty crazy about the Rudy Gay trade is that they basically gave him away. I mean, they gave away him and Hadidi Hamad for, you know, Jose Calderon, who they shipped over to another team, but they basically just brought in Tayshaun Prince, Austin Day, and Ed Davis, who Ed Davis is a nice young player, but he's been a nice young player for about 2 to 3 years who hasn't done anything. So they basically gave Rudy Gay away, and if he didn't have that astronomical salary, I think the Suns could have probably come up with a very similar trade package and been able to get Rudy Gay, but his contract was just through the roof.
Yeah, well, if he was making $10 to $12 million a year, then I'd be all for him being a Sun, but not at that sticker price. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But like, just like the Toronto Raptors kind of made their power play, I mean, obviously they give you a clear direction of where that team wants to be headed the rest of the season. The Suns already did that last summer. They made their power play by acquiring Luis Scola. That gave you a clear view of picking up a guy that you couldn't move that you thought was going to help the team win now and you know, try to get right towards that back end of the lottery. So we should have already seen this coming from the Suns, because this is already where it's been trending for a long time.
Yeah, and you know what, and not to go, I don't want to completely revisit this. It's probably something we need to do at another time, if just for the sake of time, but we probably need to revisit that who would you rather be game that we did earlier, because now with Rudy Gay, again, not saying he's a superstar, but when you look at that roster and you go Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Rudy Gay, you know, the young guys at the four, Jonas Valanciunas, Andrea Bargnani, Terrence Ross off the bench. All of a sudden, that Toronto team, if they can just find a way to win close games and maybe stabilize the coaching situation and fix a tweak a few things here and there, I mean, that's a team that arguably can be a 6-8 seed in the East and then maybe progress off of that after taking their lumps in the playoffs. So we might need to revisit that game. But before we revisit that game, which will be another time for another week, let's go ahead and look ahead for the Phoenix Suns here going into next week. Starting off tonight against the New Orleans Hornets, the Anthony Davis, Austin Rivers, Ryan Anderson, Gravis Vasquez, Al-Farouq Aminu, you know, a bunch of young guys, right? Kind of like what the Suns want to get. They hit the road against New Orleans, which is a very winnable game tonight. And then for the rest of the week before we head into the All-Star game, we might as well just look at all these games, because it's going to go New Orleans on the road, Oklahoma City on the road, Oklahoma City back here, and then the Los Angeles Lakers on the road before the All-Star break, before the next time we talk. Kind of lay of the land there, Jim. What do you see with that stretch of games? Three on the road, one at home, all against quality opponents if you take out the New Orleans Hornets out of the equation.
Yeah, well, that New Orleans game is on the second half of a back-to-back, and I think you had told me, you can correct me if I'm misstating this, that the Suns are 2-10 on the second half of back-to-backs this year, which puts them right near the bottom of the league in that category.
Yeah, and then in one of those, at one point they were 1-and those losses, but then they turned around and they beat the Clippers there on the second game of the Lindsey Hunter regime. But yeah, one of the worst teams in the league in terms of results on a back-to-back on that second game.
And so that becomes a game of paramount importance if you're wanting the team to improve their draft position like we would like them to do, or like you're saying, becomes a winnable game if you're of the disposition that you would like the Suns to, you know, win as many games as possible and decrease their draft position. So that's actually a big game. So obviously I would like to see them lose it. They're, I think a game and a half ahead of New Orleans in the standings right now. So if they beat New Orleans, that just puts some more separation between the Suns and one of their lottery counterparts that they're battling for position with. The Thunder, you know, strange things happen sometimes, so I guess nothing's outside of the realm of possibility, but the Thunder, they should smoke us. They have superior talent with Westbrook and Durant that we just cannot match up against. Then the Lakers, I'm sure that they are not going to forget the loss that they just suffered here recently. I think that's their first game back home after, I think it's like a 6 or 7 game road trip they're on right now. And other than that loss to the Suns, they've been getting healthy. They've won 6 of their last 7. They beat Brooklyn tonight. I think they have games against like Boston and Charlotte, then Miami. So, I mean, that could be a Lakers team that's like at or near 500 and, you know, coming off a good stretch of play. So, My guess, I guess, I wouldn't pick out one single game that they would win, but still, I don't have faith in the Renaissance Suns with the 4-4 record under Hunter. So I would guess 1-3 headed into the All-Star break, but I don't know where I would put that one win.
And now I'm going to paint the picture of pretty optimism. So you have a Lakers team that when we faced them a few days ago, that was a team that was getting their health back together. Now Dwight Howard is basically day-to-day with his back. You have Pau Gasol, who left the arena tonight after beating Brooklyn on crutches, or rather I should say last night. They beat the Brooklyn Nets, but Pau Gasol left on crutches. And, I mean, all it takes is a nice little elbow to the back, and Steve Nash might be on the mend. So Ron Artest was out of that Brooklyn game, and they still found a way to win. He was suspended for his choking attack from the other day. So they're actually regressively getting back down to not being healthy, so that may be the Kobe Bryant show, maybe the Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant show, or maybe the Earl Clark and Kobe Bryant show. We'll see how that works out. But, yeah, the Lakers at that point will be fresh off of their long road trip, where at this point, you know, when we next talk, I mean, they very easily could have gone maybe 5-2 on that road trip because they got some winnable games coming up here. So that'll be interesting. They could very easily win that game because, you know, it is a game where it's on the road against the Lakers, but they may not be super healthy. New Orleans, if they can just not let Ryan Anderson hit 8 or 7 threes like he has in the last two games, then that should be a fairly winnable game in terms of, you know, that's a bad team, we're a bad team, play ugly, the Suns win. And then Oklahoma City, they might just get bored playing us, you know, to playing a bad team. They might just get bored heading into the All-Star break. They got about 5 or 6 All-Stars, and, you know, guys got to get their mind right for that All-Star game, figure out what kind of trick shots and off-the-backboard dunks they're going to throw to themselves. So I think they could steal one of those. So pretty optimism says they can easily go 3-1, but Suns futility and the track record of the season says that they're probably going to go 1-3 or potentially even 0-4. That New Orleans team's got a lot of young talent, and one of those young talents that the Suns wanted, Eric Gordon's back on the mend, by the way. So dodged a bullet with that one, just like they did with Amari Stoudemire, right, Jim?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Amari, he's actually been kind of tearing it up for the Knicks lately, so he seems like he is getting back in shape, back in form. I guess his explosiveness coming back, and he's practically become the point-a-minute man over there. He's shooting almost 60% from the field. So, yeah, that was a bullet there. And then Eric Gordon, you know, at the $12 million, that's like the exact same scenario. So there are different maxes. Amari's max is a lot more expensive, so you need to get really good production for that. So even at his play, Amari's probably below that threshold still. But, and that's where the Rudy Gay money is, too. So, but not all maxes are the same. And the Eric Gordon max was about $12, $13 million, and that would be perfectly fine. I'd take Eric Gordon for that price. If you gave me Rudy Gay for $12 million, I'd like that, too. So you have that there. Like I said, you never know. I mean, anything's within the realm of possibility. Maybe Westbrook has one of those patented 6-for-22 games and kind of shoots Oklahoma City in the foot. But then against us, he usually dominates. We don't really have anybody that can match up against him at all. So we'll see how it goes. If you know, if anything, you know, if recent history serves as a marker, as a some way to augur the future, then the Suns will probably go like 3-1, and they'll beat Oklahoma City somehow and beat the Lakers, which will actually be a good win. But that way, they'll go into the break with some positive momentum and ready to come out here and try to finish up the season like 37-45 and pick 12.
Yeah, and you know what? And that goes right back to counterpoint your remarks that we made in our little pre-show meeting where you said, I joked that the Suns were on their way back to the 13th pick, and you said that you don't think mathematically they can get there. Well, a 3-1 week puts them at 20-33, and win-loss-wise, Dallas and Philly are going to be losing some games, so they might be in that position very easily. But hey, when Lindsey Hunter took over, the team was 13-28. He's 4-4 with them right now. Four more games that we just talked about, and 1-3 makes them 18-35. 3-1 makes them 20-33. In terms of wins and losses, that doesn't sound like a lot, but in terms of the NBA draft, that's a swing from 4 to potentially 10th or 11th or something like that. That goes from getting a potential franchise cornerstone, or, you know, a guy that can be 3rd or 4th on your depth chart as far as best talented players, to having a guy who might end up sitting at the end of the bench and getting some minutes here and there, like, you know, recent 13 picks have. So that's a wrap, though. That's the Phoenix Suns podcast, episode 8. We'll be back next week to kind of preview the All-Star game and hopefully have something real special lined up for you in terms of maybe a special guest next week. And outside of that, that's it. Jim, any parting thoughts?
Yeah, so we got a pre All-Star game show. That should be a fun event there. Who do we got playing in that game again?
I think if we decide to go with the Legends game, I think it would be really cool to see maybe Kurt or Barkley get out there. Maybe we'll throw out Diana Taurasi, maybe get Kendall Marshall to get out there. I think we're probably going to have nobody, by the way, out there in any of the events.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, Kendall Marshall, already part of All-Star Weekend as a rookie. This is right on his career path.
Yeah, Markieff Morris was part of the Rookie Rising Stars Challenge, rather, last year, not part of it this year. Kendall jokingly said that he got snubbed this year when we were talking to him before the game the other day. And, yeah, looks like, I mean, obviously no Suns All-Stars. No one's shooting the ball at a high level. No one's dunking the ball at an entertaining level. And no rookie second-year guys are dominating the game. So there's that. We'll probably be talking about a Suns-less All-Star game, which is not unknown, but it's definitely uncharted territory over the past 10 to 12 years.
Yeah, Dudley's dunks are always exciting. And who says that Babby and Blanks can't draft?
There you go. All right, guys, that's episode 8. We'll catch you guys next week.